Welcome back. Our guest this week is the senior advisor to the Michael Bloomberg campaign for president, former journalist Tim O'Brien. Our lead story, the state is suing four major drug manufacturers. On the OTR panel, Jonathan Osteen, Emily Lawler, and Rick Pluta. Sit in with us as we get the inside out off the record.
Production of Off the Record is made possible in part by a grant from Vanguard Public Affairs. With nearly three decades of experience providing strategic counsel to leaders in the public, philanthropic, and private sectors, Vanguard Public Affairs specializes in digital communications, issue management, public affairs, and reputation management services for communities, organizations, and leaders across the Midwest. Information at vanguard-pa.com. And now, this edition of Off the Record with Tim Skubick.
Thank you very much. Welcome back to OTR during this holiday season. We are taping on the 19th of December. Is that the date today?
Yeah. What year?
Ask me tomorrow, okay? The governor and attorney general going after some drug manufacturers. Here's why.
These companies have demonstrated both malice and aggravated and egregious fraud.
These four companies distribute opioids in Michigan, and the attorney general and governor allege that they have done it illegally and with disregard for the public health. The state filed a suit today and immediately went on the offensive to make the case that Michigan residents have died at the hands of these drug companies. The attorney general argues these companies
are a direct and proximate cause of the widespread diversion of prescription opioids for non-medical uses in Michigan, substantially contributing to the opioid epidemic and prescription opioid abuse, addiction, and death in the state of Michigan.
The state contends the epidemic produced over 2,000 deaths in 2017 and placed Michigan number 15 in the nation on that front. And the state also contends the firms
had an obligation to protect the Michigan communities these companies supposedly serve. They failed miserably.
But a defense attorney might argue, why is the state not suing the auto companies? Because they also produce products that kill people.
Governor, what's the difference between suing these drug companies and not suing the auto companies producing cars that kill people?
I'm going to defer to my lawyer on that one.
The attorney general says the analogy does not hold up.
I don't see them distributing their product knowing that those cars later will be used to kill people, even though in accidents that happens all the time. I don't see the analogy.
The attorney general hopes to recoup upwards of $1 billion in damages to pay for the state services related to this epidemic created by these companies, the state contends.
All right, Emily, did the state have a case here?
Well, it's interesting. They're charging them, when we say Drug Dealer Liability Act, that is an act that was intended for drug dealers. So it's a civil case. But they're going after them for damages essentially related to the harm that they're saying these companies have caused. So they cited increased costs for specialized opioid courts, for children born with opioid dependency, for special education for children who might have been born with opioid dependency. They're saying that right now the state, counties, local government are bearing a lot of these costs and that a settlement upwards of $1 billion could potentially help alleviate that.
I don't know if it's an apples-to-apples comparison, but there are certainly similarities to what states have done with tobacco companies, that these are not going to be the last drug companies that the state of Michigan is going to go after. We will see if other states follow suit and if this becomes a bigger thing than it seems like right now. Like Emily said, yeah. That this law was directed at what were, I guess you call them, street dealers, crack cocaine, things like that. And what the state is contending here is that these large drug companies, these large with distribution operations, are in fact drug dealers that continue to deal, even though they are aware of the harm that it was causing.
Exactly, Tim. To your analogy, the attorney general here is taking a novel approach. She's not suing the automaker, as it were. She's suing the distributors, the folks who are the middlemen between the people actually making the drugs drugs and the doctors prescribing them. And what she's arguing is that these middlemen didn't do enough to raise questions when large, huge prescriptions came in and sort of facilitated, as Attorney General called it, a diversion of these drugs onto the street. And she's taking a very novel approach here, at least according to her office. No other state has gone after these these distributors under the state drug dealer law like this. So it's a different approach.
And in the preliminary checking that I've done, I have not been able to find another state that's taken exactly this approach.
Is some smart attorney on behalf of the drug companies going to argue before the court the intent of the legislature was to deal with the guys and the ladies on the street that are selling this stuff? And Your Honor, with all due respect, my respectable drug companies are not drug dealers, ergo this case is done.
I don't know, you know, exactly how that plays out, but it's interesting to me. I have some prescriptions, and when I went one time when we were going to pick them up, that behind the counter, they offered us free of charge Narcan mists, the mists that are supposed to deal with opioid overdoses. And I was kind of wondering, so does this make the case that the drug companies are aware of this and are trying to do something about it, or is it kind of, you know, contribute to the indictment?
Well, we'd call the CEO of McKesson on the stand. Sir, have you ever sold drugs on the street? No, Your Honor. Next witness.
Well, Tim, of course, it's a novel lawsuit, as I said. Of course, the drug companies have good lawyers, high-paid lawyers. At the same time, they're dealing with a PR crisis here as well related to the opioid crisis. They certainly are saying up front that they're trying to contribute to solutions to this problem. They have settled some cases on different legal grounds in different states. So it'll be interesting to see how hard they fight this case. The Attorney General is seeking an optimistic. She could get some pretty significant damages for the state. She was talking about upwards of $1 billion, which would make it a very large lawsuit.
Just the companies that have been sued so far, the expectation is that more of these lawsuits are on the way.
One of the key points in the lawsuit that tries to kind of make the case that that these companies are liable in this way is that they were shipping more prescriptions for opioids to Michigan than they knew could possibly be medically necessary. I think she said over a 4-year period, there were more than 2 billion pills shipped here. I know my colleague, Julie Mack, has done some data reporting. In 2016, I think, is the most recently available data, there were more opioid prescriptions in the state of Michigan than there are people. So I think that there's some stark realities that definitely more pills were coming in than we could use.
And what she was asking the companies to do is, hey, red flag that stuff. Stop those shipments. But is there a law that says they have to do that?
The companies that I talked to said that they do already take some precautions to try to make sure that that people are getting the appropriate amount of opioids, based on their need and condition. And what the state is saying, I mean, you may be doing something, for example, handing out, Narcan mist, but it's not enough, and that it's not enough. You're just raking in money on this.
Donald Trump and Battle Creek. Why Battle Creek?
Well, Battle Creek is in Calhoun County. That's one of 12 counties that the president flipped that had voted for Obama until he won those counties in 2016. It's also, as we reported for Bridge last week, it's one of the counties, one of those flip counties that hasn't seen the kind of economic gains that Trump was promising that helped him win those sorts of counties. Certainly, Michigan's economy as a whole is better. The national economy is doing remarkably well by some metrics. But in Calhoun County, since the president was elected, jobs are actually down. Average wages are sluggish and slightly down. So he's got some work to do to retain, to keep those sort of counties in his column, and I think that's why he chose there. That's why the vice president was in Saginaw County. It's why Laura Trump
We've
was in
Macomb
County. We've
never had the president and vice president in the state at the same time that I can remember.
Not that I remember. My political memory is shorter than yours. But yeah, even just even just from a logistical standpoint of getting the top two here.
Well, Saula News, I thought, had a good take on
the
this.
The former Michigan Republican Party chairman.
Right in the middle of the state, Battle Creek, 1 hour away from the Detroit media market, 1 hour away from Grand Rapids. We sucked those folks into the tent. And if you've got 60% of the population in that region. So if you're looking to draw 10 to 20,000 people, that's where you go rather than Macomb County, which the guys in the west side of the state wouldn't come in. Plus, it was not only to help Trump, but to help John James, who was there and spoke, and also to help win back one of those congressional seats over in Oakland County. So he's got a lot riding in Michigan.
There were only about 5,500 people actually who could fit into this arena, so it wasn't the largest venue that the president could have chosen. But look, it just turned out this way that no matter where he held this rally, there were going to be reporters from every media market in the country there.
Given what the day was.
The president took the stage as the U.S. House was literally beginning to vote for articles of impeachment, which they approved while he was on stage, making him just the third president in U.S. history to actually be impeached.
So are the two Democratic new congresswomen at risk for supporting impeachment down in Oakland County?
I think that he certainly tried to make that point a little bit.
I don't think they're at any more risk than they were going in. Because the people that weren't going to vote for him are not going to vote for him anyway. And there may have picked up some stragglers who said, you know what, that took guts to take that stance.
It's going to be a turnout election. How inspired people are to get out and vote, whether it's by anger, whether it's by some sense of optimism, and having, you know, the president and the vice president, you know, we should point out, come to Michigan, stokes those emotions, although both for and against Donald Trump.
Certainly both for Representative Alyssa Sotkins and Haley Stevens, it is a political risk. They both represent districts that did vote for President Trump in 2016. We have seen in some of the national polling that impeachment, you know, had been about even publicly in the polls and now maybe is dipping a little bit, support for impeachment. That said, most of the voters who elected them were Democrats. The prospect of impeachment is still very popular with most Democratic voters. It's those swing voters that, of course, they have to be concerned about. And, I think we have to wait and see how big of an issue this is going to be almost a year from now when the election actually occurs.
What did we learn at the governor's year-end news conference yesterday?
Says at least she's going to make another run at funding for the programs that she wants, in particular road funding.
You considered that news?
In the sense, you know what, it's interesting.
Say, oh, well, we didn't get it. Bye-bye.
It's interesting to me. Well, first of all, she doesn't have much of a choice having a run on that. But also, you know, in these things that, you know, there's always this back and forth. And she couldn't help but get a dig in on the, you know, Republicans in the legislature for, you know, as she put it, not doing their jobs.
They never put a plan on the table.
And this has worked so well so far.
One thing that she signaled, though, is that there might be a change in approach. Obviously, she came out of the gate with the 45-cent gas tax for roads, her biggest priority. About the future of that, it seems a little bit more murky. I think she said at one point that it might not be wise to keep trying the same thing again. They're forming some sort of new roads proposal, not clear what that is yet. And she kept that pretty close to the vest.
That's going to be the interesting thing to watch here. Of course, it's not surprising that the governor is going to try again to fulfill her top campaign pledge, which is to fix the damn roads. But what's going to be fascinating to watch now is after a year of failed attempts of the legislature, what she comes out of the gate with and how willing she is then to negotiate moving forward, and whether she's willing to do what she has said she doesn't want to do, which is take an incremental approach. Mm-hmm. In her State of the State address last year, she was very clear that doing that in the past hasn't fixed the problem. She wanted to take a big bite out of the apple all at once. She'll revisit that strategy.
Almost simultaneous to that, we also learned that word has gone out to state departments that they should be ready to offer up some cuts. ostensibly in case the economy tightens, which is, you know, very, very, very possible, if not probable.
Well, they've got tax credits that are coming on the books next round. The general fund thing is going to be a problem. Maybe she ought to go to the R's first and say, if I run this by you, what would you do? Is that a smart move or not? Crickets. Yeah. Crickets.
I mean, I think
maybe start with her own Democrats since they bailed on her in the last...
A very good starting point. I mean, I think to Jonathan's point, she went with the one big vote tactic. The pull one lever, I think, was her line. That's not working. The question now is how many tiny levers it takes to get there.
Right, do we agree that there will be a new gas tax proposal in this plan, yay or nay?
Yes.
I think it'll be a component.
Yep. All right, let's call in our guest, Tim O'Brien from the Bloomberg for President campaign. Tim O'Brien is the senior advisor to the Michael Bloomberg campaign for president. He's a former reporter for The New York Times, The Wall Street Journal, The Huffington Post, and NBC News. He's written a book on Donald Trump and Mr. Trump sued him. He's in Michigan to lay the groundwork for his candidate's campaign here. Mr. O'Brien, welcome to Off the Record.
It's great to be here.
Jonathan's got the first toss-up, sir.
All right.
So, Mr. O'Brien, obviously, Michael Bloomberg, Mayor Bloomberg of New York, has gotten into this race a little later than many of the other Democratic candidates. What challenges does that pose for you in a state like Michigan?
Well, I think, Michael Bloomberg has a great story to tell Michigan voters. Getting into anything late means you have a little less time to tell them. However, the advantage we have is that Mike can come out of the gates running a national campaign while he also focuses on a handful of very important swing states. We also feel that his story actually isn't known to most voters. He's caricatured often as a big city wealthy mayor. He's wealthy. He did run a big city, but he's also a profoundly self-made man. He grew up in very humble circumstances. His father worked for a dairy company in Massachusetts. He put himself through college working as a parking lot attendant. Founded a multi-billion dollar company on the heels of severance payments he got after he lost one of his first big jobs, and went on to become one of the country's most prominent philanthropists, a successful three-term mayor of a major city, and founded a company that employs 20,000 people.
We know his resume, but I think
I don't actually know that people know his resume. I think people
we know his resume, but what is it about Michael Bloomberg that would allow him to flip Michigan as opposed to Donald Trump or some of the other Republican wannabes out there?
Well, because I think Michael Bloomberg is a unique candidate. He comes to this with more governing experience than anybody else running on either side of the aisle. He's actually delivered policy solutions to people. And I think for voters right now who feel a bit at sea, they haven't found a candidate yet in the Democratic Party that they can be comfortable with, but they're also disturbed by all of the chaos and juvenile delinquency that's marked the Trump administration, and they want to change. And I think in Michael Bloomberg, you get a hardworking, honest public servant who has vast experience delivering public policy solutions around issues like job creation, health care, immigration, gun control, the environment, and on and on.
Do people like billionaires?
I think that people always have a healthy reaction to what are billionaires in anything.
A negative reaction.
Success is nothing somebody has to apologize for. We're in the state that Henry Ford founded a major automobile company. I don't think anybody begrudges the fact that Henry Ford made a lot of money because he figured out how to make cars better than anyone else. Nobody begrudges the fact that Steve Jobs invented a better telephone or that Oprah Winfrey got wealthy running an entertainment empire. Mike Bloomberg made a global calculator that everyone in the financial services industry uses to make great investment decisions. He's got nothing to apologize for that, but I think it's healthy that he should be asked what he wants to do with that money. And I think if you look at his record, what he's done with that money constantly, consistently, is given large amounts of it away. He's given around $10 billion away for philanthropic causes. And he went into public service. He could have just sat back on his laurels. But he's not somebody who sits on the sideline when he sees a problem or a crisis, and he thinks of Donald Trump as embodying a national crisis.
What infrastructure are we seeing the Bloomberg campaign creating in Michigan and the rest of the industrial Midwest?
We're in 30 states already, and not just in a token way. We have paid staff in 30 states. We'll be in all 50, I think, by mid-January.
What's the Michigan paid staff?
We'll let you know soon because we're going to open a headquarters in Detroit very soon.
Mr. O'Brien, give us a number. How many you got?
You know, I'm not at liberty to say, but you'll find out.
Why can't you tell us?
Because I actually don't know the exact number, but I really don't know the exact number right now.
We'll take a round number.
We're going to have the biggest ground operation of any campaign in the United States, and I'm optimistic, or I'm confident to say I think we'll have the biggest ground operation in Michigan.
What campaign has the biggest ground operation right now?
In Michigan?
Sure.
Have you seen much of Joe Biden here? Have you seen much of Elizabeth Warren? She just recently opened an office. I think we're the second campaign to open an office. We're going to be knocking on people's doors. We take Michigan seriously. Mike Bloomberg takes the voters of Michigan seriously, and I think our campaign is going to reflect that.
You mentioned there being a handful of states that are important to your strategy. Is Michigan one of those, and yeah. What role does our state play in the overall election plan you have?
Clearly Michigan is front and center for us, along with Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Arizona, New Mexico, North Carolina. I think we see a handful of states as really ultimately, when the general election rolls around, providing the tipping point to who's going to determine who the next president's going to be. We're fortunate enough, because of Mike's resources and because of the team that he's built, that we can wage both a national election and focus on these swing states right out of the gate, and we're going to continue to do that. I think Michigan specifically embodies a lot of the issues that we think voters care about and which Mike Bloomberg can solve for them. Donald Trump has made a lot of promises to American voters, but specifically to Michigan voters, that he hasn't kept. He said he was going to revive the manufacturing sector. He hasn't. He said he was going to fix the healthcare system. All he did was launch an ill-fated attack on the ACA and has not come up with a solution for that in the wake of that, of those shenanigans. And that was 2 years ago.
Jim, regardless of how well-equipped Mayor Bloomberg is to take on Donald Trump, he first has to win a Democratic primary.
Right.
And he was not too long ago a Republican who, in fact, donated or helped fund advertisements for former Michigan Governor Rick Snyder in 2014. How do you explain that to now Democratic primary voters who you need to help give him the opportunity to take on Trump?
Mike Bloomberg was a Democrat for most of his career. He became a Republican when he wanted to be mayor of New York. He then registered. He was an independent after that. And I think he mourns and is very disturbed by the direction the Republican Party has taken. He feels much more comfortable as a Democrat. I think you can cherry pick.
He wasn't aware of the direction the Republican Party was taking when he ran for mayor?
I don't think that. He ran for mayor nearly 20 years ago, and the GOP 20 years ago is not Donald Trump's GOP right now. They're almost indistinguishable from one another.
So if John McCain didn't win the primary?
I want to finish answering Jonathan's question. I think, you know, you can cherry pick who Mike Bloomberg has given money to in any state. He supported Snyder because Snyder had views on immigration that aligned with where Mike was. He supported Republicans in other states who've supported gun control measures. As you also know, he's given money to Governor Whitmer. He's given money to other Democrats who are vulnerable in the state of Michigan. He was a pivotal force helping Democrats in the 2018 midterms. He's recently given money to Democrats who are vulnerable in the impeachment proceedings. So,
have you talked to Governor Whitmer's office?
I have not.
Okay, is she on the agenda to talk to?
Of course.
You're going to ask for her endorsement?
Governor Whitmer is very important to this campaign.
But are you going to ask for the endorsement?
I think that's up to Mike Bloomberg.
Well, let me come back to you. You say he switched parties to run for mayor. He made a political opportunistic change of parties in order to get elected. Is that what he did?
I think Mike Bloomberg is a problem solver, and I think the party system in this country unfortunately sometimes prevents people who have new ideas or who have novel approaches from actually getting inside the machinery of governing. And that's not who he is. He's not somebody who's going to wait on the outside.
But he switched parties because he wanted to get elected.
He switched parties because he wanted to serve.
What 20-year-old Republican idea does Mike Bloomberg bring to the Democratic campaign right now?
Does that mean that there are no, the 20-year-old ideas have passed
by
the
wayside? Well, you said that 20 years ago this was a different Republican Party. What 20-year-old...
I think, you know, the Republican Party used to be a party, I think, that embraced the notion of fiscal conservatism, that embraced the notion of the rule of law, that had a long tradition of being tolerant around things like immigration and religious diversity, and it no longer does. It's a party that's turned into a cult of personality around Donald Trump. And Donald Trump is destroying core values and core institutions in this country that have made it great in the past, and that disturbs Michael Bloomberg. He's the descendant of immigrants. He's a self-made man. He's spent a career empowering people who've been either marginalized or need a leg up in society. And Donald Trump's trying to undermine all of that.
So if he was so excited about running, why did he wait till now, this so late to get in?
Well, he considered it, Tim, earlier in the year. I think he felt in early 2019 that the Democratic field was populated by people who could bring a good case to Donald Trump and beat Donald Trump in 2020. As the year wore on, he became much less certain of that. Our campaign had done its own polling in swing states, and we really discovered that the candidates, the existing field, was not going to compete well against Trump in swing states, and it probably would lose in most of the swing states, and also consequently would lose in a general election.
You mentioned this kind of dichotomous or bipartisan political history, perhaps. The last person that Michigan voted for in a Democratic presidential primary was, of course, Bernie Sanders. Are you confident that you can pull voters into those more centrist ideologies and away from this sort of Sanders leftist wing of the party?
Well, specifically with Michigan, as you know, Michigan has so many, you know, it's such an interesting map of different political affinities. I think the voter we want to appeal to is a voter who wants somebody who is sick of gridlock in Washington, is sick of the chaos, the cover-up, and the corruption that marks the Trump administration, and wants to put the federal government back in the hands of a responsible adult who also thinks long and hard about their needs. I think one of the truisms of Donald Trump is that he authentically doesn't care about anyone else but himself, and that includes voters.
Mr. Bryant, will you stay for overtime?
I'd love to.
We're just getting warmed up.
All right, thank you.
All right, let's take a quick break. Go to WKAR.org for our conversation with Tim O'Brien from the Bloomberg Campaign for President.
Production of Off the Record is made possible in part by a grant from Vanguard Public Affairs. With nearly three decades of experience providing strategic counsel to leaders in the public, philanthropic, and private sectors, Vanguard Public Affairs specializes in digital communications, issue management, public affairs, and reputation management services for communities, organizations, and leaders across the Midwest. Information at vanguard-pa.com. For more Off the Record, visit WKAR.org. Michigan Public Television stations have contributed to the production costs of Off the Record with Tim Skubick.